Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
And this is a good evening. This is Wednesday, August 8th, and you are on At the Edge. This is your host, Sherry Ann Turpin. Good evening. Zina, is it? I pronounce that correctly? I'm not sure. Zina or Tizina?
Tizina.
Tizina, okay.
Yep.
Tizina Elk Pinchback is a writer and facilitator of Cat in the Belly Journal e-course. She is the author of How to Make Pink Confetti. That's published by Dancing Girl Press, 2012. Her work appears or is forthcoming in Holly Rose Review. How to Be a Good Dad is another work that's published by Germinal Press. And also, Mermaids and Merwomen in African Folklore. And she currently resides in Georgia. Good evening, Tizina. How are you?
I am good. Thanks for having me.
Right. So I'm holding in my hand your chapbook, and I haven't really had a chance to go through it in depth. As you know, I am putting together a review of your work, but I can say that your work definitely has that magic, has those qualities that I would associate with Afrofuturism. Afrofuturism is not just about science fiction or speculative fiction, and it's not just music. I mean, it's an entire way of thinking. And in fact, when I first saw you, when I first encountered you, it was because of the series of conversations that we started on the internet through Twitter. I've met so many wonderful people. And I would consider you definitely to be a part of that circle. And so this is going to be pretty much kind of a laid-back kind of evening, a chance for us to talk poetry, the creative process, gods and goddesses, mermaids and mermen. Wanted to kind of give note to something that that you said to me, and this is something that's going on at City Gallery at Waterfront Park in Charleston, South Carolina.
Yes.
And it's called Mermaids and Merwomen in Black Folklore. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, actually, I was invited to submit a couple of poems. I have three poems in that are going to be included in the exhibit. It's a fiber arts exhibit, and it's going to be in Charleston. It's September 6th through September 9th, and it's at the City Gallery. And it is the largest, it'll be the largest of its kind. So it's actually focused totally on mermaids and merwomen in African folklore, or more to the point, folklore of the African diaspora. So there are all these great artists that have come together, visual artists, photographers, quilters, painters who have transferred their works or had worked with someone to transfer their works onto some sort of fabric panels, different types of quilts, and everything you can think of. And they wanted a few poets to work with, so three of my poems were were accepted and included. So I'm going to be down there doing my first reading on September 8th. And there's an entire four-day event planned for the actual gallery opening, for the exhibit opening, for the reading for the poets and writers. There's going to be a few scholars that are going to be doing some lectures on that Thursday and Friday evening. And there's even going to be a small film. And a director, I don't know the person's name, I don't have that information yet, but she's actually screening a film about the culture and legacy of mermaids and merwomen in the off the coast of the south, some of the southeastern coast of the U.S. So that should be very interesting.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to it. It starts Thursday.
Right.
Thursday the 6th, and I think the last event is on the 9th, that Sunday.
Okay. And so how long is this exhibit going to be up? I mean, the entire exhibit.
The entire exhibit is going to be up for a month. So it will be running through the second week of October. So I'm really, really excited. I've never had a chance to be involved with something like this. So it's nice to actually be a part of it. It's really, really humbling that they, you know, decided to use my poems and then they're having me read and participate in the festivities. So I'm extremely excited.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, you know, whenever I think of South Carolina now, I think about the Yoruba village that's in South Carolina. I think of the Gula people and their tradition. And of course, you know, it's almost as if, you know, the Orishas has, you know, just completely, in some ways, you know, kind of taken over and, you know, taken over the conversation when it comes to the African diaspora. And so I'm really happy to hear that that this exhibit is going on. So, you know, when we talk about African folklore, you know, some of our listeners may be familiar with, you know, with Ifa. Some may not, or have some familiarity with Nigerian culture. But, you know, when you told me about this, you know, a couple of names came to mind. One of them being Yemoja or Yemaya.
Right.
Olokun, right. And those are, you know, major Orishas. But a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, within many African traditions, you know, you've got Orishas, but you also have other spirits, you know, other entities, you know, mermaids, as you say, mermaids, merwomen, mermen, fairies, and many other, you know, many other archetypes. And so I think that this is actually very important. This is a very important event because it brings this kind of knowledge to the public and helps us to understand what exactly ended up being brought over as a result of the Middle Passage, that despite the horrors of the Middle Passage, African cultural traditions did survive and continue to thrive.
Right.
So your writing reflects that.
You know, it's really interesting, too, because I have to say, when I first heard about the exhibit, and I heard about a friend of mine said, "This sounds right up your alley." She just saw mermaids in the call for submissions for poets and writers, and so I started reading it, and I was I was fairly ignorant to how prevalent mermaids are in and merwomen in Black folklore. And I had no idea. As a matter of fact, I was talking to the curator a few weeks ago, and her name, by the way, is Cookie Washington. And
Cookie Washington.
Cookie Washington. I had no idea. I'm a native of California. I had no idea that California is named for a Black sea goddess. And I don't have the name. I can look it up, but I don't have it, and I should have it because I'm a real stickler for bringing up things that I can't reference, but when she told me, I was really surprised, and she was surprised that I didn't know, because she figured, you know, being from California, I said, well, you know, like everything, there's so much of history in this country that we just don't know the, you know, what the actual source is or what the actual reference is or the origin, mm-hmm. and I had no idea. So I got a really good education, let's say, over the last couple of months, just reading some of the other works and then doing research of my own, because, you know, I think of mermaids, and for whatever reason, for the longest time, I just never really connected or linked Orishas with mermaids, because I'm thinking of a different, you know, my mind, a mermaid has a certain, you know, I'm thinking of different images and different imagery, and that probably does come from the fact that I am from California. I'm from Southern California.
Right. Right.
You know, it's a different, you don't think of Southern California, Redondo Beach, California, as highly African-centered geography. So,
wow.
You kind of carry the images.
But you're connected with the sea. I mean, you know, you go from,
yeah.
you went from one ocean to the other, and so,
I went from cold water to warm water, from the Pacific
exactly.
to the Atlantic. Absolutely, yeah.
Exactly. We have a caller on here. I'm not sure who this is. Could you introduce yourself? Hello.
Is it me?
Yes. Hi.
It's Cookie Washington.
Oh,
hi,
Cookie Washington. Hi,
sweetie. I'll see you in 3 weeks. I'm so excited. I just want to say that the sister's poetry is so beautiful and so breathtaking, and people must run to the bookstore to get her book. When I was loading in the poems to send to the publisher, I got to your poems, and I had to stop and turn off the computer because I was weeping so much with the beauty of your words.
Oh, thank you so much.
I'm so proud. They are just, you know how much I can talk, because we've talked. I really didn't have words when I took a minute to observe and take it in. Thank you for bearing witness in such a beautiful way.
Thank you,
Chris.
To this
subject that is so close to my heart. But I want your book to be absolutely a bestseller, because it is so beautiful, but it's also educational and enlightening and very, very precious. You have given the world such a gift.
And I have a request from one of our chat participants, Aphri Rodnick. I don't know if you all are familiar with her work, but she has a request. She's wondering, you know, if Tavinia will be sharing any of her work. Would you like to share?
Yes, I will read. Definitely. I should be more organized than being that I've spoken to you, and I know this is coming up, but yeah, I was
would you like
making
to
sure I had all my
book?
Reference points.
sure.
You know what?
I am just so in love with your work. I really am. And you know, I'm looking at one of the poems, and suddenly, I imagine you floating. 12 weeks, then again, a rapid pulse, swimming in tiny sack clear like cellophane, not falling or being torn from me, but raging desire to run, breathe, touch bread, wine someday, sun to lips, and suddenly we were bones, splintered in two, edge pushed through flesh, a wound, and I imagine you a fairy in tiny sack clear like cellophane, a swath of copper and iron confetti, wings glittering, folded beneath your feet,
standing on the branch of a boak tree, jutting from the leaves of my umbilicus. And I'm you know, the sensuality of it, the sensuality, mm-hmm. the idea of, you know, of having the spirit that's within you, that's mm-hmm. growing within you, this life spirit. I mean, I'm reading this and I'm feeling this life experience. I've never had a child, but I've often wondered what it would be like. And reading this poem, it's absolutely, it produces a particular emotion in me that's hard to describe here.
Well, I will say for this collection, for Pink Confetti, I had a few people, actually I had quite a few people ask. It's a collection of 12 poems. And I had a few people ask, you know, why not do a larger collection? I am very, I love the idea of small kind of morsels of poetry. And I think this piece for my first chapbook, I think this collection is it's thick. It's
right.
It's like a molasses. In other words, I couldn't imagine putting together 20 of these, or I couldn't imagine writing 20 of these actually. But it's there's a lot of life and a lot of blood and a lot of death and kind of dying and renewing going on. This piece here, and suddenly, that, by the way, you read beautifully. I really love when people read.
Thank you.
What works for me, because I'm not a performance poet, so I don't read my work that often. I read it to myself, but I don't, you know, read it. So I enjoy hearing other poets, and I've, you know, heard other poets that are really, really able to kind of capture their work and, you know, really nuance it when they read it on stage. That, and
you're inspiring,
I actually,
me.
Well, I hate the sound of my own voice, so that's a,
no, but
that's a whole different.
A beautiful voice.
Thank you.
Beautiful,
that's just
voice.
A whole different neurotic story, but I don't like. So I don't like recording and all that. It makes me really neurotic. But yes, I am going to read for you tonight. But this piece, And Suddenly, it was, when I first wrote it about 2 years ago, it was titled The Abortion Song, kind of a rough title.
Right.
See, I have a daughter. I have one child, a daughter. She's 15. And people ask me all the time, why don't you write about your daughter more? I'm very careful about who I write about. I think a lot of times my writing is very spiritually connected, and I think words are forever. So to me, whenever you are following a spirit, or you're following this energy, or whatever it is that's calling or tugging, tugging at you to write, I think you have to be really careful what you put down on paper, because it's forever. It doesn't go away. You can't, you know, you can destroy it, but it doesn't go away. It's always there. So when I do write about my daughter, it's kind of few and far between, and I usually don't publish it. I don't think I've ever published a piece that I've written about my daughter so far.
Right.
But I wanted to... I wanted to kind of give homage to the daughter that didn't make it, the daughter that wasn't born.
Well, you know that there are prayers, and there are ceremonies within Lukumi and within Ifa for the unborn, and that when you honor your Igun, you honor your ancestors, you honor not only those who have passed on, but you also honor those who are of the unborn. And this is something that, you know, that I learned. You know, whether it be because of miscarriage or stillborn or abortion. And so there is that space to be able to honor that life force while it was there. to honor that, because in that there was this, you know, that there's a reason for everything. You know, there's a reason for the presence of a particular spirit, whether that spirit is with you for the long haul or just for a brief time.
Right.
And so I feel that with this poem.
And you can imagine this, you know, my daughter wanted to read the manuscript, and I don't usually, up until now, I haven't allowed her to read my work. Not a lot of it. I have kind of not so much censored. I've just kept it away from her so that she didn't know a lot of it existed. So with this manuscript, she was very, very adamant about reading it. And so when she got to this, interestingly, at 14, she didn't think this was about her. She knew it was about a mother and a child. She knew it was about pregnancy and a birth of some sort, but she knew instantly it wasn't about her, and she asked me. And I think that might be because my daughter's extremely in tune to emotions and feelings of, you know, she's a teenager, so they have a feeling and an emotion every 5 minutes. But she and I, you know, we had a discussion, a great discussion about it. And
right.
But I think this piece is very indicative of the collection. The collection is, it is about a mermaid, and the mermaid kind of functions as a motif.
Okay.
And okay. So there's a lot of going back and forth. Each poem is a different voice, or a different persona. There's one poem toward the end, Ali Ali Oxen Free, when they all kind of come out or come together.
Right.
To sort of, you know, they all kind of come out to bring their stuff, to bring their junk, to bring their whatever, and kind of put it on display. And then, you know, they kind of like fold, so they fold away or fall away. I guess is the best way to describe it. And so I think this piece kind of works in there. It to me, this is this collection is a loop. The first poem, they do still believe, or they still believe in mermaids, that most people probably won't realize is a poem since it's only two lines long. It looks more like a dedication. So, but the first poem, or the first full-length poem, is Six Figures Lullaby, which is addressing worth. And then the last poem in the book is also doing the same thing, kind of reexamining worth and value and kind of cost, even currency, non-currency items, you know. So there's a lot of I wanted to put some things in here that I thought were very true to – would be true to the persona when you're evaluating worth and decisions and kind of from a woman's perspective. I think as women, we have so many little deaths as well as so many great births. I think when you have a child or when you become a mother, I think there's a part of you that dies and there is a greater part of you that's born. I think if you make the decision not to become a mother, I think that's a death and a birth as well. There's a death of that part of you that is connected to society's notion of what you're supposed to do as a woman. I mean, society wants us to be fertile and to produce and to bear seed and to be sexual. You know, it's like in society we have roles. We have the roles for the breast. We have the budding perfect breasts, and we have the breasts that are sexual and, you know, salacious for our mates. And then we have the nurturing breast that, you know, cradles our children and feeds our children. Then we have sort of the dying breast. After we've made the love and we've created or we've born life, then it's kind of the dying off of the breast. It's, you know, the calcifying, I tend to think. So I think for women, there's always a sort of dying and rebirth that's going on with us all the time. Not to say that our experience is better or more profound than men. It's just different, and I think it should be acknowledged and maybe studied or maybe illuminated.
And I think you're right about that. I think that you know, there is something to be said about you know, acknowledging the fact that, you know, our experiences are different. Yes. You know, how we deal with our bodies. You know, I'm 45 years old. I have not had a child yet, but, you know, I'm still, you know, still overly fertile. And there's that mm-hmm. awareness of that. But I put that in, I ended up putting a lot of that energy into my writing. And so, you know, how I interact, you know, with my students, how I interact with my writing, you know, there's an awareness of that. And, you know, and I used to kind of shun that and kind of, you know, try to shut that down. You do all of that academic training, you're kind of encouraged to separate yourself from your body. But I find that it is important. And I think that for us as women of color, as Black women, it is important because it's a part of our humanity and embracing our full humanity. And I find it important as a practitioner of Lukumi and Wicca, that you have to embrace that. A couple of things that come to my mind. There's actually three things. One of them, Rakik has requested that you read that poem, by the way. Number one.
Which one?
which one? I guess the poem that the poem that you had mentioned about the one that you began with regard to mermaid. She's typing right now, so the abortion song. Well,
and suddenly the one you just read.
Okay, so yes, so the abortion song, yeah, so that and suddenly is the abortion song, and so
yes,
of course you know what comes to my mind is Gwendolyn Brooks. When she wrote her poem about abortion. But I like yours.
That poem,
I do.
You know, I read that poem when I was 19 and I was working in the library at UCLA. And I was probably taking like a lunch break. And I happened across one of her collections and I read that poem. And that poem, it seated me. I can't think of any other way to say it. I was standing in the stack and I sat down. It made me take a seat, and I had to sit. You know, there's some works that, you know, you just have to sit with. That was one of those for me. I remember that. So I know exactly what poem you're talking about. I love that poem.
Right, And I love those last lines. I loved you. I loved you all. It flies in the face of, you know, the assumptions that you get from a lot of folks who like to make commentaries about, you know, those of us who have gone through that experience.
You're not supposed to write poems about abortion.
No, not at all. And you're supposed to somehow feel as though you've done such evil that you walk away in shame. But I mean, so much about female sexuality, Black female sexuality, you know, in shrouded in this kind of shaming, you know?
Absolutely.
So a couple other things come to my mind. I think about the archetypes. I mean, there are African archetypes or European archetypes, whether you were talking about, you know, the maid, the mother, the crone, or, you know, within Lukumi and Ifa, you know, you have Oshun, you have Yemaya, you have Oya, you know, you have the male and female aspects of Alokun, and such powerful, powerful archetypes. And I think whether you come from an African perspective or from a non-Christian or from a rebooted, I mean, there's some aspects of Mary that don't necessarily ascribe to the traditional Catholic beliefs. And the real Mary is far older than the Catholic or the Protestant traditions. The idea of a woman who has the ability to give birth to gods, the ability to produce life, that comes through in your work. And then, of course, the last piece, before I forget,
the idea of your words having power and that they stick around. And with that, I think of my poetry, a lot of my poetry, they're prayers, they're spells, really.
Mm-hmm.
And so your power is in your language, your ability to take that language and, you know, and endow it with power, give it power. And it does set forth movement, energy. Words are energy. And I feel that in your work.
Thank
you. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because I'm, you know, you, when you're talking about movies, you're talking about birth, that's magic.
You know, I have a few pieces, and it's funny because the three pieces that are in the that are included in the mermaids and merwomen pieces, those to me are almost they almost feel like incantations. They're very there's like a rhythm to them. There's a feeling to them. There's a movement, and they feel very. They very much feel like the ocean. They feel like water. These pieces and how to make pink confetti feel like earth to me. They feel like building blocks, like stones, like big. Some of them are very dense. The second poem in the book, which is the excerpt that's on Dancing Girl Press on the publisher site, is the Stick Figures Lullaby. The entire work really is born out of that poem. This entire collection here is born out of that poem. To me, that poem is very, it's a very large boulder. It's not very attractive, but it's very, it's big, it's ominous, it's boisterous. But there are other pieces in the book that are, you know, smooth black stones, and there's some little white stones, and there's some, you know, there's some bone, and there's some fossilized flesh, you know, but everything is solid. All the pieces to me in this collection are very solid. That's not to say that I'm speaking of my work saying that I've written a solid piece of work. It's just the energy that I feel from the pieces. To me, they feel very substantial. If you were
all
to,
right, so I need to come get you.
Okay, so, well...
Because you don't have train fare.
Someone has...
I think that's a caller.
It's another caller.
Yeah.
But it's another caller. But what I'm going to ask that you do, Suzanne, could you give us another sample?
I'm sorry.
Either of a... Hi, how are you? This is your host. We're in the midst of the conversation. Could you give us your name?
My name is Bianca Dorsey.
Hi, Bianca. Hi. How are you this evening?
I'm good. I just heard some of your show. It sounds very nice.
Thank you very much. I'm just about to ask Suzanga if she could read either from Mermaids or from Pink Confetti. Give us an idea of some of that roughness or smoothness.
Okay. I will read The Stick Figures Lullaby. I will give you a little bit about this. This, for me, and it may not be the same for the reader, but for me, this sets the tone of the book. This tells you about the mermaid. It tells you about the motif of what is going to happen, what is represented in the work. I specifically chose for the Stick Figures Lullaby. It's written in a pantoum form, so it has a refrain. So you'll get two lines in, and then you're repeating, and then you're going. You're taking two steps forward, and then you're taking two steps back. And I did that specifically because of the topic. I wanted to explore something very unsavory. And I wanted to kind of marry that to a very traditional, beautiful form, a classic form of poetry writing. So I did that specifically with this piece. And the title is The Stick Figures Lullaby.
Okay.
Here in the Thursday house, I know my worth. A dime bag is fair trade for a little girl. Broken smiles are a kind of pretty, Mr. Curtis says. I know my worth. A daughter is her mother's best currency. Broken smiles are a kind of pretty. Mr. Curtis says junkies will pick you clean to bone. A daughter is her mother's best currency. See my dancing skeleton? Scribbled in chalk? Junkies will pick you clean to bone. I shimmy under the weight of this flesh. My dancing skeleton, scribbled in chalk, frames a hand-me-down map of the world. I shimmy under its weight. This flesh sings a ramshackle serenade. Four corners of a hand-me-down map of the world. A dime bag is fair trade. A little girl sings a ramshackle serenade here in the Thursday house. End poem.
Wow. That's heavy. That's heavy. I mean, it's a trite way of saying it, but it's, you know, but you're giving us, you're right, that that's a very difficult. But we have to deal with it. We have to deal with the horror, you know, of existence as well. What inspired you?
Some of that is actually some of this piece, and a very good friend of mine who has had this conversation with me about this piece. I wrote this piece in 2007, the end of 2007. I workshopped it at, I went to the writer's workshop at Hurst & Wright in D.C. Through the Hurst & Wright organization, their Writers Week. And I've workshopped this poem two or three times. And a very good friend of mine, I went to a writing group with some friends, and artist friends a few years ago, told me that I shouldn't put this piece in the book, that I shouldn't include this in my manuscript because the question would come up, how did you get inspired to write this? Well, some of this poem is memoir for me. So that is me speaking. That is my voice speaking. That is a 7-year-old girl speaking. I liked the idea of a little girl being 7 and having a knowledge that's beyond her years. Yeah. And it being, and I liked her being able to kind of present that or kind of take in the world and understand what the knowledge, this knowledge here, being able to understand that this frames a map of the world. Because she understands, even though she does not understand the dynamics that are going on beyond the scenes or behind the scenes, she understands this knowledge that a daughter is her mother's best currency. And I think when girls have this kind of awareness, they can take in the world. Mm-hmm. It coats the entire world. It's sort of parts the sea, so to speak. You understand exactly what is possible. You understand what can happen. And more importantly, you understand what will happen. And that can either be, it can go on to, I don't want to say it could be empowering, but it can be, it can give you a sort of power, but it can also be, it could be a shackle of sorts.
All right.
Because, like I say in the piece, there's
right.
That skin that doesn't go away.
Right. And you have to, it has to come out in some way, somehow. That it's a painful memory, but it has to come through. It has to be it's testimony. And in poetry, when I think of poetry, I don't think of poetry, it's just always, nice and pleasant and whatnot. And of course, I think of Audre Lorde and some of the other poets that, who've inspired me. A lot of poetry that, that I've come to cherish has so many horrific memories, angry memories sometimes,
mm-hmm.
and they have to be brought forth. That is also magic. It's a way of cleaning that out, you know, bringing it forth, and that voice needs to be heard. That 7-year-old needs to be able to speak up. How else do
yes.
we change?
Yes.
How else do we change? Yes. Yes, indeed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's the you know there's kind of the layering of that. You know, we see this girl here. We see her in a couple of other pieces. To an extent, we see her sisters in the book, and maybe some of her friends, maybe you know, women that she's passed on the street. When I was thinking or putting together Pink Confetti, I create these fairy tales all the time. It's something I've done since I was probably about, you know, 5 or 6. So I create these fairy tales, and I had created a fairy tale about a mermaid and her fisherman that had found her, and she loved him, and he fell in love with her, and she decided to leave the sea to come on land to be with him and live with him. But, mm-hmm. you know, as time goes on, he gets worried that she's going to leave. You know, she's going to miss the ocean eventually. What is she going to do? She comes and goes. You know, she leaves and she may be gone for a couple of days. He goes to the ocean, but she always comes back. And
right.
he's talking with friends, and they tell him, you know, you need to keep her from being able to change back and forth. If you want to keep her on land and you want to keep her out of the ocean, you need to descale her. And that's what the first poem is, when he's telling her, you know, the best, you know, a dull knife is best for removing scales. And the other guy tells him there's, you know, a rusted spade behind the flower's bed. And that is the idea for me, how you make pink confetti, by descaling, taking away the magic, stripping a woman. People can do it to us. We can do it to ourselves. Life
right.
does it. You have to find your confetti and kind of, you know, reclaim it or take it back, I guess. Sometimes you have to take it back from yourself, because I think we do plenty of, you know, things in the way of descaling or making ourselves into
right.
confetti. And you're right. It's what you have to do.
Right. It's just, and you know, that image, of course, you know, makes me think, you know, destroying the spirit. Destroying the spirit. And you know, I remember when I was a child, I often felt like, you know, I was kind of told, well, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that. My father later explained to me, after many years of therapy, that for some reason he feared that I would somehow, you know, grow up and become disillusioned, or would somehow, try to become something that, you know, that at that particular time he felt to be impossible. And this is something that we see, you know, and, you know, happens to a lot of young black girls, and that he felt like he had to burst my bubble, destroy my spirit. He actually said that, and he now realizes that that was a mistake. But ultimately, he wasn't able to do that, but it certainly wounded me. And so when I think of, the stripping away of confetti, the stripping away of magic, I mean, those are wounds, very hard to heal, and some of them just don't heal, at least not very well.
Yeah. And there's something interesting about thinking about descaling, the act of descaling. It's violent, and it's rigorous, and it's needful. You scale a fish to, you know, in essence, you scale a fish to eat it, most likely. But I like the idea of, even in this descaling, whatever is left over, the parts that are left over, the shreddings, the whatever that's left over, even the discards, they're confetti. They're still pretty.
Mm-hmm.
They're still
mm-hmm.
worth something. In other words, even the discards are, you know, and I think that's kind of a for me, with the that's what the work says for me. It's like even in its parts and even in its discards, there's still some beauty there.
Right.
That can be found, and there can so there's a lot going on at the intersection of horror and beauty and some sexuality, and there's some religion in there, there's some Christianity, there's some I'm sure there's things in there that people will see or will think are pagan. I mean, it's there's a lot going on. There's a lot of interplay and kind of tug of war. There's a little battle going on with kind
right.
of, you know, a little instead of a rope, they're maybe pulling a really pretty pink ribbon or something. I don't know.
I think that's also a reflection of what's actually going on, within many, many Black communities. This tug of war, this struggle,
mm-hmm.
this question of, well, you know, what are we? You know, who do we turn to? You know, for you know, to get that magic back. You know, that confetti is there.
Right.
We can still, you know, even though it's been sort of placed aside for a moment, we can still dress up, play dress up. We can
mm-hmm.
still put some of those pieces back on. We can still, take on that aspect. I think of my journey from Christianity to paganism as sort of doing that in a sense, and that's probably one of the reasons why I find your work so inspiring. The idea of doing that. We want to take another call.
Okay.
Could you give us your name? Hello?
Yes, hello. Hello?
Hi. This is Sherry Ann. How are you?
Hi.
You're on the air.
Yes, I'm Bianca Dorsey. I'm one of the artists in the show, the Mermaid Show.
Oh, wow. Hi. Could you tell us a bit about your work with Tanzania?
Well, I'm sitting here quilting it now.
Okay.
I find it interesting you were talking about descaling, because I got some scales, and yes, it is a very violent process to remove scales. I saw some men removing scales with a metal brush the other day, but I'm putting the scales, the actual real scales, on my mermaids, on my quilt.
Oh, very nice! I can't wait to see everyone's work. And I have to say, these ladies from the exhibit are just giving me all kind of just love. And you know, I've got so many emails from a lot of the artists today, and just even tonight, calling in on the show. So thank you so very much.
Sure.
Wow! Absolutely, absolutely fabulous. And in fact, what I want to do, you know, for our remaining time, so that you all get a chance to be able to share what you do, and to be able to give you proper props. Sandra, could you maybe start off with telling the audience how do you get your work, and again sharing with the audience where is this exhibit, and just kind of run it down the line, Cookie and Bianca and those of you who I haven't named, just go ahead and tell me about your work and, share with the audience where you can catch hold of it, any publications or websites.
Oh, okay. Well, my work, this is an adventure for me doing a quilt. I typically do tankas, which are also paintings on silk, and I like to deal with issues of women in power and goddesses all the time in my work.
Very
beautiful.
I like to empower everyday regular women, to show them that they're goddess and they're divine. with my work.
Yes. Very nice.
So this was a nice extension of that, to be invited to be on this show. So
wonderful. That is absolutely stunning. And, you know, this is very encouraging. And how could people, get a chance to, I guess, support you in your work?
Oh, okay. Well, I have a website where some of my work can be seen.
Okay.
Can I give that?
Of course.
Okay.
Website,
yes,
phone number, anything you like.
Okay. All right. It's http://BINCA.DORSEY.BrooklynArtist.com/. And some of my work can be seen there. And I also do jewelry, and that can be seen at amajewelry.com.
Beautiful. Wonderful. Cookie, are you still there with us? Oh, she's
cooking.
Yeah. Well, she might be distracted for a moment. But Ms. Pinchback, could you tell
us? Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Tell us your publications, where they can go get them, and of course the exhibit.
Let's see. For my book, How to Make Pink Confetti, you can get it. It is available through my publisher's site, Dancing Girl Press, www.dancinggirlpress, just as it sounds, Dancing Girl Press. My blog, which will actually link you to the publisher site as well for the book, and you can also read some of my other work. From time to time, I put other writings up there and, musings or what have you. TazeniaPinchback.com. That's TZYNYAPINCHBACK.com. And you can link to me on Facebook. Pretty much if you put in TZYNYA in Google, you'll find me because my name is so unusual.
Right.
It will eventually link
right.
you. Yeah, it'll link right. you either to me on Facebook or directly to my blog site. So
right.
definitely.
Right. And Bianca, before you before we depart, I've gotten some requests from folk on the chat line who wanted me to type this in. And so, if you would, could you forward that information to my email, and I'll go ahead and I'll read it so that people can, and if people would like to follow up with emails and comments and whatnot, I can be reached on my email. br.cat@amazonmaryac.com. That's Dr. Cat at mac.com. That's br.cat@mac.com. And if you could forward all those links and whatnot,
sure.
Not only will I provide that information in my blog on WordPress, and that WordPress blog is Afrofuturism Scholar. That's one word, AfrofuturismScholar.com. What I'll also do is I'll take a look at your website and, and make sure that, that I do a little write-up. Looks like we need to have a conversation.
That sounds wonderful.
On
sure.
Future show. And so... And I'll do that. And of course, my blog already has some information on Ms. Pinchback. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure that I do a nice little write up of tonight's show and include material on this upcoming exhibit.
Yes, I think we're going to have.
Yeah,
I think we're really going to have a really great turnout.
Yes.
So that'll be
yes.
great. have people, you know, be able to get the book and to see the works. Oh my gosh, I'm really, really excited. I can't wait to be in the company of all these great artists.
Oh yes, definitely. So, callers, did you all have anything else that you wanted to share, that you wanted to add? You know, I'm really glad to see so many people, you know, are really committed, you know, to these ideas and whatnot, and committed to art. Any last words from any of our other callers? Okay. All right. So, Bianca, did you have any last words for us this evening?
I just think it's important that everybody sees a spark of divinity in them, and they utilize it in their life.
Yes, absolutely, very good. And to Zanga, and of course, I know I have mangled your name to death this evening. I do apologize for that. I'll get it right. We need to talk.
You know, I didn't send it to you phonetically. I didn't send it to you phonetically, and I typically do that even at work when I start on a new project. I always give the team my name. I email it to them. Phonetically, it's just, you know, convenient.
Right.
But it's hard to remember to get to work there in the mouth. So.
Right. So, any last words for us?
Let's see. We have, 5 minutes left?
We're technically speaking out of time, but supposedly it's still recording. So as long as I keep it on here, it'll still record. And so that basically means that until I hit end episode or until this machine says, "Oh, you gotta go," we can keep going. So take as much time as you like, and please promote. That's where it's at.
Well, I will leave you guys with a poem from the Mermaids and Merwomen exhibit. This is one of the pieces that is included. And this is one of those light rocks. This is one of those water pieces, since I gave you guys so much of the heavy up front.
Okay.
And this is one of my favorite pieces. I just like it. It feels good. It feels good to read it, and it feels good to, you know, to just be a part of it. And this poem is titled Kantos. Kantos is meter and rhyme and breath and place. It is light and shadow and texture and space. It is ink-stained palm sliding buckskin drum, a dust-born kiss to blackwash the sun, a blood like lava push hot in my vein. Daddy, suckle the teat, sweet as rum and cane. It is pulse and tendon and hairs and bone, a clay and moss and sand and stone. There is sea glass and wool, anchor dragged cross skin, a death spell lust dressing Calypso's fin, a stamp of the feet and clang of the bell, echo a salve from deep in my well. It is callow, like swirl of ether painted red. Kantos is song of your name coiled on my tongue's bed. The end.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for
sharing this evening. And so this will conclude tonight's episode. Would like to invite you all to come back at the end of the month, not this Wednesday, but the following Wednesday. I think that's the 29th, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's the 29th. Madrina Angelica will Madrina Angelina will be on, and she will be talking about Palo Mayombe, Voodoo, and Lukumi. And so we will kind of continue on with ideas about magic and whatnot. You can also check out what I have on my blog, AfrofuturismScholar.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Dr. Turpin. Okay, and I'm also on Facebook, Dr. Sherry Ann Turpin. If you'd like to comment, you can email me at drcat@mac.com. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful evening. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.